GDI on Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas, continuing my conversation with Kate Rattusny, Marina Melillo, and Consuelo Sr., all experts, I would say, in the area of managing and responding to grief on behalf of people with intellectual disabilities. Where we left off, we were just about to kind of roll up our sleeves and talk about the hard work around preparing our staff to respond to this challenge. And, you know, in the course of even thinking about that conversation, we had to go to the larger issue of, are any of us really prepared ourselves? I mean, we live in a culture that likes to homogenize, or seems to homogenize, death, and kind of wants it to all go away, which it never does. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, Kate, you had mentioned the idea that we are absolutely in the business of people, in the business of our shared humanity. What are the implications of that?
I agree that staff needs to be trained in how to respond to, you know, bereavement issues or counseling, but we also need to remember that we're dealing with people, and sometimes a hug or some personal, you know, touching somebody's hand goes a long way. You know, there's a lot to be said for that human contact, and just remembering that we're no different.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, we certainly are much more alike than we are different. Mm-hmm. And you know, that comment especially is so timely, because sometimes we are so sensitized, for a good reason, about the, you know, about privacy, about personal space, about being professional and all that, and all that's important. However, sometimes we can reach a point where there's no instinct. Mm-hmm. There's no, just your basic natural human instinct tells us, listen, this person needs a hug. They're suffering.
I'll always ask. Still ask. Can
okay.
I hug you?
And still ask.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes,
and still ask. And I bet there's a lot of times when somebody in pain will say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
I think it's really important that when educating staff on how to deal with this subject, that we don't only focus on, you know, counseling and talking and, you know, the real clinical aspect of it, and that we encourage them to look at themselves and, you know, if they've ever experienced grief, what did that look like for them? Or if they've never experienced a death, maybe what a breakup, like what, how did they feel after a breakup, and what were those things that made them feel better? And then look at the people that they're supporting and say, well, maybe this person wants to stay home and eat some ice cream, or maybe this person wants to take a trip to Disney World. You know,
sure.
You know, it could look in all different ways.
I think that's right, and really giving people the freedom and the space to make those kind of choices, no question about it. You know, one of the points that we've talked a little bit about is that while there are differences between, potentially some differences between people who have an intellectual disability as opposed to, say, the general population, there could be some differences in the way that's expressed. To add another layer of complexity, there's also enormous within-group differences. So just knowing that someone has an intellectual disability is certainly not enough to know how they're going to experience their grief. Also, within those groups, there's going to be lots and lots of individual difference. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I absolutely do. And I think, especially in this environment where we're talking about being person-centered,
yeah,
that we find out even at that point, what would someone want? What would you want to do? Do I want to stay home? But, you know, I think it's so important that because we're from so many different places, that we also find out how someone would want to be at that stage in life. I really think we need to take it out from the corner, take the concept of end of life, and think about end of life care. We think about everyday care, but what does end of life care look like for each person?
Mm-hmm.
And help them to realize that they still have a part in that. It's still going to be scary. None of us know what it is because we're still here. but I think that even at the end of life, you're still individuals. And for staff to recognize that, let me find out what they want.
Yeah.
And let's talk about what you want.
No question. You know, I think what we haven't talked a whole lot about, but I think it bears some emphasis, is that since we all know that, you know, the life process lends the river goes in one direction, and that's the life process. But I think it's helpful to kind of recognize that there is such a thing as healthy grieving.
Yes.
That's where we started last week, the idea of the brutal gift, right? There is that opportunity for growth and change and transformation and deep insight, but there is such a thing as healthy grieving. What I think is important for this conversation, even the last few moments of our show, is to understand that the people we support, people with intellectual disabilities, are unfortunately at greater risk for what they call traumatic grief. And that has a lot to do with that inability to communicate, that inability to get their needs met. Also not to have agency to kind of fill in for themselves with all those secondary losses that we talked about around not only losing the person, but losing all the things that the person did for them. So with all those disadvantages, they're at much greater risk for what we call traumatic grief, and much more in need of, believe it or not, real therapy. You wouldn't think so because of all the communication deficits, but it's never been more important. So I'm just going to give you a list of what some of the hallmarks of traumatic grief can look like. It doesn't have to be all of these, but a lot of these are signs. So things like consistent and intrusive thoughts about the deceased, yearning for the deceased, but searching for constant loneliness, purposelessness, right? Numbness, difficulty acknowledging death, feeling that a part of oneself has died, a shattered worldview, assuming symptoms or harmful behaviors or related to a deceased person, right? Excessive irritability. And if that duration of those kind of feelings, all of us could have those feelings for a little while after the loss of somebody. But if they're persisting, if those are going on now well beyond 2 months, that's a clarion call for support. And so even though these are rather dramatic symptoms, they're also common and ubiquitous to all of us for certain periods of time. It's when it goes on for a long time. So what tips would you guys have for staff, knowing what we do about the greater likelihood of protracted grief for our population? What tips do you have? You've given some good ones already, to be really sensitive to changes in baseline, to give space, and time and real recognition that a person can be suffering. Probably is. What are the thoughts? What would you like to include in a training that would address this topic with your staff? What would you like to see included?
Memorials.
Say that?
Memorials.
Oh, memorials, yeah.
An opportunity to remember that person in the way that you want to remember them. Even someone who doesn't know what the months of the year are, somehow around that time, we often will see a spike in behavior, mm-hmm. and not realizing that they're still feeling the loss. Somehow they know. So definitely ways of acknowledging the person who is gone and allowing them that opportunity to remember them.
You know, I like that, and I think that's so important. And even when you frame that, it caught my attention right away, because somehow they know. That's a great way of putting that, because even if someone doesn't identify, gee, it's the fall, and this is when I lost so-and-so, if they can't consciously know it or express it necessarily, on some level people know, right? Sometimes people know right below the level of which they can say it, but they're still feeling something and knowing it. And what I like about that is memorializing that allows us to kind of be aware this is coming and anticipate and put something in place.
Yes, and it should, for staff, then have that written down somewhere. So when staff turn over, right, staff are aware that around this time, this is when their mom passed away, mm-hmm. and you may start seeing this. And, you know, so what are you going
to
do for it?
Because I think that's more proactive than reactive.
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe have a photo album available or plan a trip to the cemetery or whatever works for that particular person.
No, but that's really good strategy, just around having them having them prepared and having them ready for this. I think one of the pieces that came through the conversation loud and clear also is this idea that for staff to help the people they're supporting, people with ID, they also have to do their very best to come to terms with losses in their own life. I mean, well, it's a human condition to come to terms. Who really comes to terms fully with their mortality and the fact that the people, all the people that they care about, eventually we will go, as I said, in one way. So that's a tall order. You know, we live in a field, happily, that is all about positivity and about creating and celebrating life and creating paths that develop and cultivate potential. Well, this is such a different journey, but it's essential. So I want to thank you for your time. Could not be a more important topic. Pleasure.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.